Good morning, everyone, and welcome. No, not today, because I've been doing it since I'm doing, but I don't know. I have to work it out. we'll get there. Welcome back, everyone, to a new term. Nice to see everyone. We're slowly getting back, everyone back to Bina. We're working on it. This term, we're starting a new topic. The topic is called Talk, Connect, and Inspire. And I'm also going to base it on a book which I've been reading, which I'll talk about in a few moments, called Conversational Intelligence by a woman called Judith Glasser. I'll explain in a moment. Now, we've done series before on language and on communication and so on, but number one, it's always good to revisit such an important topic. And second of all, obviously, we're going to try and look at it from a bit of a different perspective and use her work as well. But I wanted to start today just with a beautiful story, a news story that I just saw recently in the last few days coming out of Israel. Nice way to begin, and also the relevance to the topic will become clear, I think, later as we continue the discussion. Just a beautiful story of a person called Shlomo Galster, who was a Hasidic Jew living in northern Israel. And unfortunately, I mean, it's a sad story, but it has a beautiful part to it. Unfortunately, he contracted COVID a month ago. He was hospitalized in Ha'emek Medical Center, which is in Afula. And on Thursday morning, I think it was referring to last Thursday morning, unfortunately, he took a very bad turn. And his family, who they were going to allow to come if things got really bad, they were informed that really it's moments away and they should come and say their goodbye. Unfortunately, what happened was, as they started coming to the hospital, they got stuck in a traffic jam. Mm-hmm. And the medical workers on the COVID floor saw that they're not going to make it. So the head nurse who had been treating him, whose name is Ibrahim Maher, not Jewish, sorry? A man, an Arab, stepped in and he said he knew that he would definitely want to say the Shema before he passes away. But he didn't know the exact Hebrew words, but he did his best. He walked over to him and he told him that he wants to say the Shema, and he was still semi-conscious and he kind of saw that he was happy. And he said it. And he told the newspaper afterwards, he said, I didn't know the words exactly, but I knew how important it was that he hear the word Shema Yisrael. We knew him and his family. We were fond of him. We prayed with him for his own sake and his family. It was clear to me he wanted us to say the Shema. We have one God, Maher said, right? Which is very beautiful. So the family came, and unfortunately it was too late. But he thought it was important that he tell the daughter that's what he did, because they would get some strength and hopefully some comfort out of that. And he told him, and the daughter, this Shlomo Galster's daughter, told a news outlet that obviously it was a very difficult and sad day, but she said that her father never stopped talking about the devoted care that he was receiving and how thankful he was to Ibrahim Maher and the whole team. So I just thought it's such a beautiful thing that I read that and I thought to myself, the human spirit is still alive. With all the stuff going on in the world, there's still a human being still has an amazing spirit and it's still alive. And it's a powerful example of people who are from two worlds apart and unfortunately sometimes represent as two opposite things and such conflict and so on and so forth. But yet there's a connection, there's respect, there's warmth, and there's a deep bond. Now, one of the ways that it happens, one of the ways that it could happen and it could improve across the board, not just in medical centers and not just with special people like this, is through words and through communication, which is really the basis of what we're going to talk about. So just to give you a little bit of background in terms of the book that we're going to base some of what we talk about on in the series. So it was in 2014, this Judith Glaser wrote this book called Conversational Intelligence. So she was, unfortunately, when I say she was, she unfortunately, a few years ago after that, contracted a very severe illness and passed away. But she was a head of an organization called Creating We, an institute, right? Which really was working with a lot of clients. It's more business, it's a business leadership sort of institution. And sort of helping big clients affect change, create a better culture, better communication between them and their clients, and so on and so forth. Incidentally, I just want to thank, I don't know if she's listening, if she's on Zoom, but Just Yvonne Kobun actually gave me the book, and she takes care of the Australian branch of this organization, creatingweed.com.au. So in the context of her work, she published this book called Conversational Intelligence. And she came up with this idea that we talk about IQ, then we talk about EQ, which is emotional intelligence. But then she introduces this concept called CIQ, which is conversational intelligence, right? And she says that the key to success in life and in business would be to master this concept of conversational intelligence. And she says it translates the wealth of new insights coming out of neuroscience. She bases a lot of actually on scientific knowledge from across the globe and brings the science down to earth so people can understand and apply it to their everyday lives, right? And essentially what it is, it's learning the skill of good conversation and using the intelligence which comes in the background of the conversation to, first of all, what she calls positively influence our neurochemistry, even in the moment. Because what she proves later on in the book, which is true from a Jewish perspective too, is that words have an effect even on our emotions and our intellect as we're speaking. But it's also this conversational intelligence is also the ability to express inner thoughts and feelings in an effective and successful way. And just to influence and inspire those around us to bring sort of really good results, right? And she says that to get to the next level of greatness depends on the quality and culture, which depends on the quality of relationships, which depends on the quality of our conversation. And she says everything happens through conversations, which is really true. Now, much of her work, of course, is, I just want to sort of clarify this, much of her work in the book is based on the organization that she led, which really is about bringing about success in the business context, right? Now, I'm not going to attempt to do that because I'm not sure how many people are interested in that, and I'm certainly not good at that, so it's not my area. However, the reason that it interested me in the book was because the principles that she talks about in the book really have to do with the core of general relationships and understanding the depth and the power and the impact of words and conversations. So it's really much broader than just business. It really got to do with the whole impact that we have with words in general and the impact that we have on relationships with the type of conversations that we have. And it caught my attention because a lot of the principles in her writings really are fit right into very core principles, very ancient principles of Jewish sources of how Jewish wisdom actually views the concept of words, of speaking, of conversation, and so on and so forth. So what I want to do today is just some foundational principles to lay the groundwork. And in the coming weeks, we'll develop the ideas and talk about some strategies and so on and so forth. So let me just begin with something that she says in the book, and then we'll develop some from a Jewish perspective. She says, conversations are not what we think they are, all right? We've grown up with a narrow view of conversations, thinking that they're about talking and sharing information or telling people what to do or telling others what's on our minds. Now, certainly, conversation and communication certainly includes that, right? However, we are now learning, I would dispute the now because I think it's wisdom which has been around for a long time, but we're now learning through neurological and cognitive research that a conversation goes deeper and more robust than a simple information sharing session, right? Conversations are dynamic, they're interactive, they're inclusive, they evolve, they impact the way we connect, engage, interact, and influence others, enabling us to shape reality, mindsets, events, and outcomes in a collaborative way. Conversations have the power to move us from power over others to power with others, which is a beautiful line. And she says that unhealthy conversations, of course, are at the root of distrust, betrayal, deceit, and avoidance, which leads us to lower productivity and innovation, and ultimately lower success, but that's true in every part of life. Bad conversations damage our relationships, damage our ability to inspire other people, damage all levels of relationships, whether it's horizontal relationships, vertical relationships, as we've talked about the difference in the past, in other words, parent-children, teacher-students, or friends, partners, spouses, and so on and so forth. Okay. So let's, on a foundational introduction sort of level, let's try and develop this and unpack this a little bit. So first of all, I mean, it's absolutely true that words are not just information sharing mechanisms. And we know that, first of all, Kabbalistically. So let's just, I want to share with you part of which you already know, but let me just put it together to understand how Kabbalah actually views the concept of words, which it refers to as dibur. So let me just go off a little bit and then come back, right? So we've talked about many, many, many times that the... That's okay, that's okay. We've talked about many times that the conscious structure of the human being, conscious layers of the soul, right? A consciousness essentially divides into three parts. The first part is our intellect, right? The three parts of our intellect, as we know, Chokhmah bin Adad, we talked about many times. The next part is our emotions, our feelings, our emotional responses, inwardly, in other words, what we feel inside, in terms of the stimulus, responding to the stimulus that we see outside, the chesed, the gevura, and so on. And then the last one, and those have six components, and the last one is what Kabbalah refers to as malchut, right? Malchut is, we talked about it on Tuesday a little bit, malchut is translated essentially as leadership. But what it means in terms of our conscious structure, it means the following. The reason that's called malchut, which means a king, a melech, right? Just like a king, what's the ability of a king? What's the greatness of a true leader? Not that he's cleverer than other people necessarily, or she's cleverer than other people. Not that they have better emotional health than other people, because they don't necessarily. They are very, very brilliant people who are hopeless leaders, right? The greatness of a leader is that a leader, the leadership quality means, leadership quality is not an entity in its own. Leadership by definition means the ability to take other things, like cognition, like emotion, process them properly, and apply them forward in a functional, healthy, and effective way. Okay, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah? So all a leader does, a leader can be equally as clever as the next person in the next room, but the person who's an academic, you know, call them absent-minded professors, for example, sometimes, right? Why? Because they have brilliant intellect, but they can't do anything with intellect. I mean, they could create intellectual ideas, but it doesn't allow them to lead. In other words, the leader takes the same intellect or the same emotion and can process it really well, and then apply it to the outside, apply it to properly lead, right? And connect to others, and lead others, and inspire others, and so on. So it's not, the intellect that they're using is no different. I mean, obviously, a leader has to have competent intellect, but it's no different necessarily to other people, but it's what you do with that intellect, right? Which is why in Kabbalah we find the malchut referred to as the feminine trait, right? Because the masculine energy and the feminine energy in Kabbalah particularly is the concept of, the masculine energy is about creating the concept, the feminine is about just as it is in the physical, the newness, the creation, the potential for life, for example, comes to the male, but it's only through going through the female process of gestation and pregnancy and so forth that the birth is actually possible, right? Otherwise, the newness dissipates and nothing happens with it. The same thing in ideas and in leadership, the malchut is called the feminine aspect of our consciousness because it's able to be mekabel, it absorbs, it takes in, it receives that which we have on the other layers of our consciousness, processes it, and it gives birth. It can actually apply it and inspire others and connect to others with it, right? When it does that, the cognition that it received, the emotion that it received and processed, goes to a whole nother level. It's so much more effective, so much greater, so much deeper. Why am I telling you all of this? Because in Kabbalah, we find that communication, words, is often a word used as a substitute for malchut. Right? Dibur, speech, and malchut are synonymous. Why? Because that's exactly what the power of communication is. The power of communication, the power of words, words do not have anything of their own. Yet they can take and propel a person to the greatest heights or the lowest depths. Right? And they're nothing. I mean, I can jabber on with words that you want to understand or even I want to understand. And it's still words, but it means nothing, right? Because there's no content in there. So words have this amazing power. All that words are, that's exactly what words are. Words are malchut, true words, meaning true communication, not just facts. True communication is the ability, it's the last part of our consciousness, it's the ability for a set of structures to absorb what we feel, to absorb what we really feel, to absorb what we really think, to absorb the ideas that we have, process them in a way that it could connect outside of me, right? And then to communicate it forward and communicate it effectively forward, connecting to other people and building relationships, right? That's why words is the root, as we've talked about many, many times. Words is the origin, is the root, is the foundation to our relationships. It's the ability of a human being to go beyond his or herself and connect to the world of another, effectively. That's the power of words, right? How does it do that? That's exactly the point that she's making. In other words, because words are not just words. Words are not just information. Words are the vehicle which gives birth to so much stuff which is inside me, including my emotions, the deepest thoughts, my deepest feelings, my deepest ideas, my deepest cognition. Does that make sense? Is that clear? Which is why it's so powerful, right? Which is why it's the point of connection, which is why it's the foundation of relationships, which is why words can do such powerful things which the raw emotion and the raw cognition cannot, because it can take us so much more forward. And it can take the person to a whole nother level for good or, God forbid, for bad, right? I think we've given this analogy before. Kabbalah gives this analogy of a horse and a rider, right? Sus ve'rochvo, coming from actually the parasha of the week a few weeks ago, where the horse only goes where the rider wants it to go, but it takes the rider there a lot faster than the rider can get there alone, right? So the rider is the one riding the horse. The horse is not leading the way, or we hope not anyways, right? But if I want to get from point A to point B, and I go on a horse, which of course I wouldn't do, but because I wouldn't get there, the horse would. But in theory, right, I would get there a lot faster. I would get there a lot faster than if I walked, right?
Why don't you challenge yourself?
I probably should. Listen, I did it with a car, so take it easy. Be easy on me, okay? I challenge myself is a very important thing. I'm just not sure right now. The horse is the area that I'm planning to do it in. I do commit to challenging myself. I'm just not sure in that area. But equally so, the rider driving the horse takes a wrong turn and will get verblunged, as they say in Yiddish, really lost, a lot faster than they would if they didn't have the horse. That's what speech is, right? And that's why it's so important to understand effective communication, because we all have the power of speech, and sometimes we don't use it properly, and we don't use it properly, it's better we didn't speak. Most times, right? Whereas it's the tool, such a critical tool that we should use, if we use it effectively, to connect to the outside world, to create, to have an impact, to connect to other people. Now, that's an introduction, a Kabbalistic introduction. Furthermore, if you break it down, if you look at a lot of the sources, particularly Kabbalistic sources, we find three things about speech, which actually Rabbi Sacks in an article summarizes it very beautifully, and I'm going to share some of it with you. And we find three things about words. The power of words. That words create, right? Words reveal, and words connect and bind us, and you'll soon see what that means. So the reason I came across is that because, you know, everything, as we always say, is hashgacha pratit, right? Nothing happens by chance. So it's interesting that we're starting the conversation about words in this week's parasha. In this week's parasha is very much connected to communication. This week's parasha is Parashat Tazria. It's the parasha which talks about the disease of leprosy, which is not leprosy in the modern context, but we use the word leprosy. It's much more of an ancient, almost spiritual disease, a skin disease that used to happen to people. And it would happen to people as a punishment for Lashon Hara, for bad speech, for gossiping, right? And the person who was diagnosed with a tzaraat through the Kohen and so on actually contracted a very severe level of impurity, spiritual impurity, which had all sorts of halachic ramifications, including that the person having the tzaraat before he or she healed would have to use the modern language, quarantine, properly quarantine, would have to isolate themselves from everyone else. And Rabbi Sacks asks the question, he says, why? Why does the Torah single out negative speech for such, so to speak, a severe, impactful punishment? And to answer that, he gathers together what is famously written in many, many places, but he gathers it together very beautifully. He talks about the seriousness of speech and the power and the impact of speech, right? In a positive way, but therefore so impactful in a negative way. And he says that this idea touches on one of the most basic principles of Jewish belief, right? Because he says, you know, in Judaism, like other religions, we have holy places, we have holy people, we have sacred times, we have consecrated rituals, of course, which is a very, very important part of Judaism and so on. But he says, and this is the way he puts it, he says, what made Judaism different is that it's supremely a religion of holy words. There's a tremendous emphasis on words in Yiddishkeit. Starting from the creation of the world, right? How did God create the world? Now we know one of the fundamental Jewish beliefs that God doesn't have a physical form. But yet the imagery that's given to us at the very beginning of the Chumash is God creates the world through dibur, through speech, through 10 utterances. Right? That's how Genesis begins. And God said, let there be the heaven, let there be clouds, let there be the plants, the trees, the animals, the human beings, and so on. Right? Throughout Judaism, God's connection to the Jewish people is through communication. We just celebrated Pesach. We're going to come up in a few weeks to Shavuot. Shavuot celebrates the revelation at Sinai. The revelation at Sinai was words. It was the communication of God giving us the Torah through words, the Ten Commandments. We heard it from God. Subsequently, one of the fundamental beliefs of Judaism is the concept of prophecy. That in the ancient times, there were prophets and God communicated to the Jewish people through prophets. Again, using words. In fact, our language, the ancient Hebrew, is called Lashon HaKodesh. That's how we refer to it. It's called the Holy Tongue, right? Because it's got that very, very sacred power to it. It's God's language. It's the communication. When we know that, and we've mentioned this before, that when God created Adam at the very beginning of Genesis, and he infused the soul into Adam, and it says in the Pasuk, Vayhi Adam lenefesh chaya, and the man became a living soul, the Targum, the Aramaic Targum, the ancient Aramaic Targum written with great holiness, printed in most Chumashim, says, translates it as, that the person became Ruach Mamala, a speaking spirit. Because just like our connection to God is through speech, that concept of our connection to God being through dibur, through communication, through words, and on every level, God gave a part of Him to us. That's the soul. The soul is the energy of godliness which God infused into the human being, which means then that the human being's connection to everything and everyone else is also through words. Right? We find later on in the story of Tanakh where there was people who did the wrong thing and they built the Tower of Babel, right? That's a story in the Chumash. And God wanted to foil their plans. How did He punish them? According to the Torah, He made them speak different language. He mixed up the languages. That was like the worst thing He could have done to them, right? Because they didn't understand each other. Therefore, they couldn't understand each other. They couldn't connect to each other. And everything fell apart, right? Dysfunction. Why? Because it was a lack of understanding. Why lack of understanding? Because a lack of alignment with communication and words, right? So therefore, if that's true that our communication, our words, is part of the essence of who we are, part of the identity of who we are as people, and it comes from the soul that God gave us because it's got a godly energy, which is why the essence of our soul ultimately is through the power of words. So therefore, the important thing for us to understand when we talk about the first concept of words is that our words are like God's words. God's words create, our words create. And that's a very scary but powerful thing. In other words, whenever we use words, particularly if it's to communicate emotion or ideas or whatever the case is, we actually create a reality. It might be not a tangible reality, but we create things. So words has a real impact. I've said this many, many times. The ancient saying that we all learned as kids, that sticks and stones can break my bones, but what does it go? Break my bones, but words. But words, but never was a hobby, is completely... It's complete rubbish, exactly. It's completely untrue, right? We know that words can have a more damaging effect than violence can, right? It's more subtle. It's hidden. We know this in relationships. We know that, it's talked about in the context of relationship abuse, right? We always think that the worst kind of abuse is violence. Now, of course, it is, because it hurts a person, injures a person. But it's not quite like that. Exactly. The mental health and the long-lasting effects that come often, and the difficulty in healing And the time it takes to heal from an abusive relationship, which was actually abuse more through words than it was through violence, is actually longer and more difficult. Because words create. Words damage. But that's the negative. We have a principle in the Talmud that whatever happens in the negative is much, much more powerful than the positive. So it's always important to understand that. It's a phrase in the Talmud that says, Merubah midat tovah midat puraniyot, which means the good measure, the positive measure, is always infinitely greater than the negative. So when we describe the negativity or the negative impact that can happen through bad words, we need to understand that it's much more so in the good, much more so in the positive, that we use language effectively, the power is infinite. Because words create. Words actually create a reality. That's the first part about words. Words create. The second thing is that words reveal, right? Words have an amazing ability to reveal the innermost hidden parts of us to other people. And it's through a very careful mechanism. Now, first of all, again, it's with God and with us, right? So again, God is transcendent. This is what we learn in Kabbalah and in the Torah, right? God is infinite, he's transcendent. He really doesn't have much of a connection to us, mere mortals, finite human beings. So how does he reveal to us? Again, through words. Not just creates through words, but reveals through words. How does words work? Words work in the most amazing way. Do you know, sometimes, for example, you have a very powerful thought, right? A very powerful feeling. And you want to share it with someone else. And sometimes you find it difficult. Because not everything that happens within ourselves can be revealed to others. And a lot of people who don't have such good communication skills find it very difficult to express what they're feeling. Why? Because when we feel something, we feel it in a flash, in a moment. Right? I mean, you know that sometimes what you feel in, what you think about or what you feel in a second can take a half an hour to explain, even if you explain it well, right? Why? Because there's a process in Kabbalah called Tzimtzum. Tzimtzum means that in order to get from something which is intrinsically me to an outside source, even with an equal, requires a process of breaking it down. It requires a process which we call Tzimtzum Bishvil HaGilui, which means I hide in order to reveal. So I tone it down, I take away the intensity, I break it down into different words, different thoughts, different sentences, different paragraphs, and then I push it forward, and then putting it all together, if I do it well, I'm able to actually, through that process of holding back and breaking it down, I'm able actually to paint a picture and to let it come through that process to you, so you get a, you know, for those that speak well, you get a feel, you get a sort of a sense of what they're really feeling, to some degree at least. Yeah, does that make sense? So God does the same way. God communicates to us through words. He transcends the words. He transcends limitation of the human being. But yet through the process of the same process, by breaking it down, by diluting, he's able to reveal part of him to us. So it's interesting. So we have this concept in Kabbalah where speech is a revealing aspect, but it's actually a revealing aspect through the process of holding back first. And that's really what Malchut is. It's again going back to that comparison. It's knowing what to give and what not to give. What will be too much and what will be too little. What could the other person handle, what they not handle, right? And a king works the same way. That's why this attribute is called Malchut. A king is transcendent. He holds back, but yet connects. Connects what he needs to connect. He just doesn't mingle with everyone. He connects from a point of holding back, but then he's able to give what he needs to give, what he's able to give, what is necessary to give, what is good to give, and that creates the concept of revelation. Which is why, you know, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe has this whole piece where he talks about Chush Hatziur. Chush Hatziur means it's an artistic ability, but not through drawing, but through words. Which means, he says, that a good communicator is someone who could paint a picture and through words describe something and then eventually make it unbelievably real. And he tells a whole story about, and real for the person themselves, even in memory it works like that as well, for it's communication to ourselves as well. He talks about a story of someone that was once describing the levels of the army regime in Russia. And he talks about how, you know, you were even scared of your captain and the captain or the lieutenant and the general until you got to the Tsar itself. And he, like when he was talking about it, he did it such a good job that if you got to the Tsar, he fainted. Right? The Tsar wasn't even there. The army wasn't there. It was a different country. But the communication was so powerful and it revealed so well that it became real, right? So that's why same thing, the power of words and in a relationship, this is such an unbelievable thing. Because that's why it bonds, that's why it connects so beautifully. Because sometimes when we communicate well, we're actually able, if we use the right words and we do it properly, we're able to connect, to reveal our innermost feelings, our innermost thoughts, if we learn the art of effective communication. So the way Rabbi Sacks put it, he says, speech allows us to convey our inwardness to others, right? And a lot of times that's very missing in the way people relate to each other, because a lot of times people use speech to just share information or what's necessary information, what I need to do today, but you don't get any sense of connection. But good communication actually could do that. And finally, he says words have another third thing, is that words actually bind a person. They create what he calls a brit, which means, I'll just give you an example so it brings that clearly. We have this concept in Torah, in halakha, actually, in Jewish law, right? If I think of something that I'm going to do, it doesn't bind me in any way, right? If I think that I'm going to give you a gift, I don't have an obligation, even a moral obligation, right? But if you give someone your word, it actually creates a connection, creates a reality. It creates a bond to that concept. And the Torah tells us that when a person promises to do something, it becomes almost what we call a vow, it becomes like a neder, right? How did it happen? Speech, the power of speech. There's a verse that says, "Kachol ha'yotze mipiv yaseh." Whatever comes out of your mouth, you should do. That's why we are taught to be careful about the things we commit to doing speech, right?
Yeah.
Because
to taste your words.
Sorry?
Be careful to taste your words.
That's right. I don't know if you ever heard the phrase, but there are some people that have a practice because of this. That when they're not sure if they can do something and they commit to doing something, but they're not 1,000% sure they could do it, they will say bli neder. I don't know if you ever heard that phrase. I say, tomorrow bli neder, I'll give you whatever, right? Because it's like clarifying that I'm doing this, but in the absence of a vow. Neder is a vow. So you say bli neder, without a vow. In other words, I'm not promising, right? And it's considered, in Jewish law, it's actually considered a good practice. Because if I have full intention of doing something for you tomorrow, and I said, tomorrow at 12 o'clock, I'll meet you on the corner and I'll give you the information that you wanted, and then something happens and I can't do it, it's considered bad because I broke my word. Even if I didn't mean to, even if it was unintentional, even if it was circumstances beyond my control, and therefore there are those that prefer to say, tomorrow, bli neder, 12 o'clock, I'll meet you on the corner and I'll give it to you, right? That kind of thing. Again, I'm just bringing it out to show you the power of words, right? Same thing when one would, in times of the temple, when one would consecrate something, when you would bring a korban, a sacrifice to God, right? You'd have to make the animal holy first. How is that done? Through words. A person would say, but animal, this is now a korban, dedicated as a sacrifice to God, all through words. Marriage happens through words. I mean, it happens, the chatan, the groom has to give the bride a ring. But actually, if he doesn't say, he has to say the hare'at mekodesha thing, right? He's got to actually say the sentence. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. So words has this thing of binding something to someone, to something, or to someone else. In a sort of legally and a sacred sort of bond. So those are the three things that we have with words: create, words reveal, and words bind you. I'll just share with you something that comes from just to bring this out, how beautiful this is, and how powerful this could be, or not, God forbid. There's a piece in Maimonides, right? The Rambam, where Maimonides talks about the conduct, what he calls of a Torah scholar. That's what he's describing there. Someone who's supposed to be on a higher level, right? So he says, he talks about a proper, the Rambam, there's a whole section in the Rambam where he talks about good conduct in general, ethical conduct, good personality attributes, and so on and so forth. And in that section, he's got the section where someone who's supposed to be held to a higher standard, for example, how they should conduct themselves and how they should even upgrade their conduct in very different areas. So when he talks about a regular person, just ordinary, the people trying to do the right thing, he says that he quotes the mitzvah of loving other people as yourself, "Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha," And therefore he says, what does that mean? It means you have to do for others, you have to do favors for others, you have to share with others, you have to do stuff for others, and so on and so forth. And you have to be l'saper bishvacho, you have to always say good things about other people. Then when it comes to a specific part of the Rambam, where he talks about the what he calls the Talmid Chacham, the person who holds to a high standard, the Torah scholar, he says, one of the things that that person is supposed to do is misaper bishvach chaviro. He should talk good about other people, v'lo bignuto klal, and should never talk negatively. He shouldn't highlight negativity about the other person at all. That's quite a high standard, okay? But the question is, what does he mean by that? Like, what's different from a regular person? Like, why is something special about that? What is he trying to bring out, right? So, just very briefly, it's an essay coming from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He once explained like this, on this Rambam. Based on the concept that words create and words reveal. This idea, right? And he said, if you look very carefully at the words of the Rambam, it's actually coming in continuation of something else. It's a continuation where he talks about the importance of judging other people favorably. Okay? Now, you see someone doing something wrong, so you're supposed to judge them favorably. What does judging favorably mean? We've talked about this before. Judging favorably doesn't always mean that you only see it as good. That's just a naive person. People do things that are wrong, right? And you can't always look at the world through rose-colored glasses as if everything is wonderful. And in fact, especially a leader, especially someone who's in a position of leadership, if they just look at everything that's good, they'll never lead, right? The job of a leader is to help people change. The job of a leader is to inspire. The job of a leader is to challenge, right? I think we talked about this recently, the difference between judging and challenging, right? So don't judge people. Judge people is to blame people, is to define them by their failings. Challenging people on the contrary is by looking at their potential and saying, no, I need to challenge you. But you can only really challenge someone if you know their deficiencies, right? At the end of the day, okay? You need to know what's lacking with the other person. Otherwise, you can't challenge them, right? You can't... Someone said, I heard a number of years ago, that the job of a rabbi is to make people uncomfortable feel comfortable and people comfortable feel uncomfortable, right? Yeah? That's the job. So
that is a challenge.
That's also a challenge, right? Yeah. I'm not sure which one is the bigger challenge, but anyway, okay. So when we say you're not supposed to judge people favoring you, what does that mean? So of course it means you're not supposed to judge them in terms of why they did it. You need to maybe understand there might be a circumstance, maybe it's not their fault, maybe their upbringing, maybe they were in a situation where they couldn't help themselves. Whatever, you're not supposed to look at it negatively, not to reinterpret what happened, because what happened is what happened, right? I mean, someone steals, they clearly steal. Stealing is a bad thing, right? And you have to challenge them on that, you have to try and help people. But you shouldn't, but you still have to try and judge them favorably. Okay. In continuation with that, right, the next paragraph is where the Maimonides, where the Rambam says that therefore a Talmud Chacham should always talk good about people and should never talk negatively about people. What's the connection? So the Rebbe explained like this. He said, because the leader, the person who's held to the highest standard, part of his job is to inspire the other person. What does it mean to inspire the other person? To inspire the other person means to reveal the good within another person, right? In other words, which goes together with judging people favorably. Judging people favorably means to a true leader actually believes in the people that they lead. They believe that everyone has intrinsic good. They believe they have deep good. They believe they have potential to improve, to change, to grow, to do good things, to act nicely, and so on and so forth, right? So therefore, the leader's job then is to approach the person, right? To approach the person who's done the wrong thing, or is doing the wrong thing, or not necessarily a wrong thing, but has room to grow and should be doing something else, and to talk to them about it. Comes along the Rambam and says, watch your words when you do that. Because if you highlight the negative too much, you are creating negativity. If you talk about the negative, negative words bring out negativity. Not just in an emotional way, in a real way, in a spiritual way. When you say something negative about a person, you reveal the negativity. Words reveal and words create. And what you're doing then is suppressing the intrinsic good and you're highlighting and revealing the bad. So therefore, the challenge, I suppose, right? The challenge, sorry? No. You know what it reminded me of? Just recently, I was giving a Talmud shiur, and the Talmud shiur, there was laws of brachot, laws of how you make blessings, and laws of benching, complicated laws in Jewish law. So I got come. We were having a great time. It was a very complicated Talmud shiur, So I met a guy afterwards who came to the shiur, and I said to him, I don't know, it was something after Shabbat. I said, "Did you enjoy the kiddush?" He says, "Rob, you ruined my kiddush." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, I can't eat anything but the kiddush anymore. There's too many different things. I don't know what blessing to make. I'm not sure what blessing to make first. All that." I said, "No, that wasn't the point. The point is to learn the stuff and to do it right, right?" So the same thing what you're saying, right? No, being shtum is not enough shtum. We will make mistakes. That's okay. But the lessons we're supposed to learn is exactly this. We're not supposed to be quiet. Because the point is not only to learn about staying away from negative language, the point is to use positive language. And therefore the Rambam says, Yisaper bishvacho, you've got to praise the person. Now praising the person, the Rambam doesn't mean to go tell the person how wonderful he is when the person clearly isn't wonderful. Right? It might be a different form of conversation completely. It might be about highlighting the potential of the person. Right? It might be with a parent and a child, what Rabbi Tursky talks about, how he was brought up, that his father did this naturally, that when he'd want to reprimand him, he would tell him in Yiddish, as pasnish. You know what pasnish means? It's what you did. It's not befitting for someone like you. That's a positive thing. In other words, you're greatness. You're better stuff than that. This didn't quite fit into that, right? Maybe we should try something different next time. And he said it was amazing. Like, had that, like, you walked around, you didn't want to do it again. It's pasnish, right? It doesn't fit for them. Rather than you're a bad person, when you say to a bad person you're a bad person or a naughty boy or whatever the case is, you're revealing that. You're revealing negativity within the person. So Rambam says, try as much as you can not to talk negative at all. Now you're a person who's judging. You have to judge. You have to challenge the person. But judge favorably. Judge favorably, understand their context. Judge favorably doesn't mean don't get them to change. Judge favorably doesn't mean, I mean, it does mean that, by the way, if it's not within our circle of influence. We've talked about this before. But because when it comes to people out of our circle of influence, we shouldn't judge altogether. But how about if someone is in our circle of influence? We can't just say don't judge them or judge favorably and therefore just ignore it. No. Judge favorably means frame it positively. Talk positively. Bring out the good in the person. Use words to create goodness. Use words to reveal goodness. Now that's not easy. Not easy at all, right? This is hopefully through the series we'll develop some sort of ability for this. But it's not an easy thing. Because our emotions take over a lot of times, and what we do with our words is we use our words to be the vehicles for our negative emotions very often. Okay, we're human beings, we're gonna do it. But we need to try and learn how to turn that around. Get the same outcome, better outcome actually, because it works. When you do it through positivity. Because the positivity reveals the good within the person. Positivity reveals the good potential within the person. And the ability to do good on that person's part, and then you can steer them in the right way. Once that's revealed, the rest is easier. Right? So, getting back to the concepts we spoke about before, I'll just end off the last 10 minutes just sharing some of the ideas that she puts in her introduction in that book, Conversational Intelligence. She says that, again, we use the words correctly. It gives us the power to think about what we're going to say and how it will impact and connect, or which emotions it will bring out. Because, see, words carry the emotions that we put into it, but it also channels our emotion, which is a very interesting thing. To express our inner thoughts, it gives us the power to interpret things differently. When you interpret a situation, when you interpret a reality positively, it becomes a positive thing. When you tell the story, once did this in a book, based on another book, right? When you tell the story negatively, it makes it negative for us. When we use words to interpret something from a positive, reframing something positively, it becomes that much more positive. One of the very powerful things she says in the introduction, which I think she develops later on, which was done in a work, in one of the projects that she had working with a client, was this principle, therefore, of using communication to connect rather than to create adversaries, right? In other words, the power of communication is to create a relationship. Very often what we do is we use words to create a divide, even not knowing it sometimes, even just the words we use, right, creates a divide rather than doing what words are supposed to do, create a connection. So I'll just share with you the story. It's interesting. So they were working with a very big client. I think it was a pharmaceutical client. That was, sales were down, right? Sales were down. The communication that happens between a pharmaceutical company and obviously is with doctors, right? With medical people. So they have a product. They have to sell the product to medical professionals. So it wasn't going very well. Doctors weren't responding well. So what they did was they trained a whole bunch of people in the company to what they called handle objections. So doctors would object, they would voice objections. There were people who handle objections then to share the right information. And it didn't help. So her company came into the whole situation. And one of the first things she said is that whole concept of someone being there to help to handle objections, that word itself creates a reality that there's a war going on. There's two teams here. There's us, there's you. You fighting with me. We call in the big guns, we call in the big people, the strong people to handle your attacks on me. That's never going to work because the other person just becomes more defensive. As soon as I'm talking to you and I feel that you're trying to handle my objection, but as a opposite team, my defenses go up, so therefore I fight back even stronger. Right? So through very simple techniques, which I think we'll develop later, she kind of turned around the whole concept that there's, we need to create partnerships, not adversaries, right? And therefore, even a simple thing like having people who are sources of information, not people handling objections, but people who know more than others that can give you more information than you had till now. That's a whole nother, it's the same thing essentially, but it's just a different approach, right? But the language you use becomes different. And this is, now, I mean, this is used in a business model, but it's so important in everything we do. It's how we talk to children, how we talk to each other. Very, very often we use language that subconsciously, or the nuances of the language, create teams. Once communication creates teams, it's no longer doing what communication is supposed to be doing. Words are no longer doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is create oneness. Everything we said before about God revealing to the world, it's all about creating greater connections, deeper connections, revelations. But as soon as we use language which creates a divide, then the creation, then the communication is downhill from there. And it's a problem.
And self-talk too. I mean, there's so much written now about self-talk.
Correct.
Which you haven't said yet, but
yeah,
what that, we say about ourselves.
About ourselves, to ourselves. Correct, correct, correct. Yeah. Because right, and I think that's an important thing to understand. Communication not only to others. Communication is messages that we give ourselves. We communicate to ourselves. The concept of dibur, in Kabbalah I talk about this a lot. There's different levels of thought, different levels of language, and part of the levels of language is how we process things in our own mind, talking to ourselves. We talk to ourselves a lot. Not verbally too much, hopefully, but we do talk to ourselves all the time. We send ourselves messages. We go back and forth. We weigh up things between different forces within ourselves, even, right? And the goal of using that power of words is to create oneness. And sometimes the messages do exactly the opposite.
There's a meme about it, they said, that says it's not what you say to everyone else that determines your life, it's what you whisper to yourself that has the greatest power.
Yeah, correct. Very good. Very good. Beautiful. Thank you. So, therefore, just to finish off the introduction, and then in the coming weeks we'll develop this more and develop the concepts. She ends off the introduction chapter by just saying three things. So the first thing we have to learn is actually a mindfulness concept, which is to be mindful of the way we talk. To actually think about the conversations we have. To think about the language that we use. Which, by the way, sometimes is before, but sometimes it's after. And that's okay. I mean, she doesn't say this, but I think that's important to understand. Sometimes it's good just to reflect on conversations of how it went and what was the language that we used. Because sometimes we use things instinctively, and that's okay. But we need to just reflect about what was the type of language and what did it trigger? Like what emotions did it carry with it? What messages, what nuances did those words carry with them, right? Because we also need to understand, and that's the second thing she says towards the end, that conversations have the ability to trigger emotional reactions. We push buttons by the words we say, which is clear, within ourselves and other people. And she ends with one sentence, which I'll just end with that. She says, we also have to remember that the words we use in our conversations are really, very rarely neutral. There's actually no such thing as neutral language, right? There can be if you're just sharing a fact, but someone asks you a question, it could be a yes or no, although even then there's the tone of the yes or no, so it's not so simple, right? I once heard from Rabbi Manus Friedman, he told a story, it wasn't even words, it was nonverbal communication. He says he was a young bocher in a yeshiva and he was in a store once. And an elder person wanted directions to someone. So he told him, he says, come here, he says, come here. He says, do you know the address of so-and-so? So he shrugged, he said, no, I don't know. And the guy got upset, he says, it's in Yiddish, he says, was machst du mit die Plätzes? Which means, why are you shrugging your shoulders like that, right? Why are you going like this? He said, I don't know, I really don't know. Right? So I don't know. It's a neutral thing, right? But it's not neutral. It's the way you say it. It's the way you treat the other person. It's like, I'm not interested in you, or I really am interested in you, but I'm sorry, I apologize, I actually don't know this information. Very different message, right? So words... Now, I'm not suggesting we should be neurotic or shtum for that matter and walk around the whole day.
We'll be quiet the whole day.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, that's not the point of this, right? Point is just to work a little bit and be more reflective about being more mindful generally. I mean, it's a good thing to be mindful the way we live all together. But it's also part of being mindful with our language and understanding the power of words. And if understanding that it creates emotions, it triggers emotions, it can carry a tremendous amount from our inside to the outside. And also that words are not really neutral. It's how we use the words, which is so important. And hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll all develop this and unpack this a lot more. Have a wonderful day. Sure.
Are you allowed to speak good about a person? Is that not a form of emotion or a
habit? I'm sorry, say that?
Are you allowed to speak good about a person? Is that not a form of
emotion? Sometimes, it depends on the context. If it's just idle chatter, that could be a problem sometimes. You're welcome, all the best. Sorry, Mimi, I just saw your comment afterwards. Yes, I will. I will try next week.